Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, September 30th, 2011. I'm your host, Greg Lucan. Today I'm joined by a one-man army. We have Tyler Jett.
I'm fighting through pain this week. I'd like to give a shout-out to Walgreens for hooking me up some good cough medicine, but I'm still kind of fighting through a sickness that was inflicted upon me by our host, Greg Luca.
See, I don't want to take the credit for that. We were in the car on the road trip to Kentucky. I was sick a while back. You remember I missed last Monday's show? No, it was 2 Mondays ago that I was sick to do it. I've been healthy.
You were
but
not.
Tyler okay, still well, wants to blame the thing on me.
Well, your whole face was covered with tissues the entire trip to Kentucky. You weren't healthy on that trip. All I can say is I felt perfectly healthy. Then we drove together to Kentucky, and then we drove home, and as we were driving home, I was sick. You can come with your own conclusions.
Yeah, you guys make the call on that one. But we had Matt Watts. He's kind of out of commission with the he's a little under the weather as well. Maybe I got him too. I don't know. And then we were gonna have Cody Jones join us today. He couldn't make it. He's feeling a little under the weather as well with a little stomach thing he's got going on. He was a last minute scratch, so unfortunately we had to run it with just the two of us today. But
yeah, Cody Jones is out with a bang on his stomach, and
yeah.
Matt Watts is out with a twinge in his throat.
Twinge, yep. If Will Muschamp was doing the injury reports, he wouldn't have got this much information. But we're here to keep you informed on our whereabouts because we know you guys are really concerned with how we're doing. On today's show, we're going to give you the you took the sunglasses off.
For the listeners that don't know, I was wearing sunglasses then. I just realized I was wearing sunglasses, so I took them off.
I just thought it was a nice touch. I thought we do the show with sunglasses
the
on.
The listeners really appreciate me wearing sunglasses while I talk.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I do it for you guys.
On today's show, we're going to give you, obviously, a complete breakdown of the Alabama game Saturday. We kind of give you what our game plan would be if we were running both teams, kind of some of the matchups to look out for position by position as we normally do it. So at the end of the show, you will be completely ready for Alabama, and we obviously have the Gator guarantees for you because it's a Friday. So before we get into all that, we got a couple emails this week. The first one was from Marshall Spivak. He actually complimented us on the sound quality, which was fun. Once again this week, I'm trying to keep a closer eye on kind of the sound levels. The little thing tells us kind of where we're at volume-wise. And with Tyler being sick, he's kind of on my level in terms of quiet.
My voice has gone down a little bit, and that brings me to Greg's level of sadness.
So maybe we're just going to get Tyler sick as often as we can to do the show. If he's willing to tough through it, it's going to be better in the long run.
So you admit you got me sick?
Yeah, biological warfare, man.
Okay.
That's what's up. And then the other one we have is from Paul Futch this week. He wanted to say that I kind of missed the end of the podcast where it said, "End the show, Barry. I know that it's run by totally different people now, but you should make up your own thing that you end all the podcasts with." So this is something that, for those of you who are kind of new to the show, for the first, however long they were doing it, every time the show would end, we would kind of say, "Thanks for listening," and then it would stop, and then it would be, "End the show, Barry," with Bobby kind of shouting that, Bobby Colovi, our old editor, and so now we don't have that anymore. We've stopped the end of the show, Barry, because Adam Barry has moved on. But I think we need our own thing. Tyler, do you have any ideas?
Yeah, we can come up with something. I want it to be organic, though.
Right.
So when we come up with something, we'll come up with something.
And it's got to be, I guess, in the flow of the show, somebody has to shout something.
Yeah, it probably won't happen this week because I'm not feeling 100%. You know what I mean? I'm fighting through pain right now. But next week, I will try to just shout out things like periodically throughout the podcast that are like non sequiturs.
Yeah, things
and
that we can
kind of
stick in
at the end. One of those things we'll probably use as our ending. So look out for that next week. We're not ready for that this week. But thanks for the email. It's a good point.
Yeah, and then one more thing on the email front before we get into the show. First of all, if you want to join the email party, send feedback to podcast@alligator.org. This is where we get everything. You send us any kind of suggestions you have for the show or any questions you have.
It's quite a mixer on there. You should join.
Yeah, it's
it's like a singles mixer.
It's a lot of fun. So, yeah, and then we talked about Marshall Spivak's email a little bit. He sent us an address that we could potentially send a t-shirt to. So, Tyler, I think you need to address the audience where we're at with the t-shirt giveaway.
Okay, well, 2 weeks ago I promised best email of the week will get a t-shirt, and I, of course, am following through on that. This week's winner is Minch Minchin. He was asking when he thinks the Gators walk-ons were going to get on the field. Because, you know, those guys are guys that are just, you know, busting their butt every day in practice and not quite making it. You know what I mean? Like, those guys every day are out there practicing so hard in that heat. They're being the scout team right now. They're pretending like they're the Alabama players, the red team right now. They're the guys getting no love. And it's about when are those guys going to get on the field in an actual game in front of the 90,000 fans in front of the Swamp? It's not going to be this week, Minch. I don't think that Florida's walk-ons are going to see much playing time against Alabama. I think you're going to pencil it in for sometime in mid-November when Florida plays Furman. Third quarter of that game, you'll see some walk-ons getting in there, mixing it up. So that's to you, Minch. expect a t-shirt soon.
All right, so we have our first t-shirt winner. If one of you sends another standout email, I'm sure we can find another t-shirt to give away. There's a lot of alligator shirts just lying around, or Tyler can give you one out of his own personal collection. Right now he's wearing a shirt with a bear on it that has 3D glasses. If you want that, maybe.
Glad you're giving everyone the visual experience of what it's like to see Tyler Jett do a podcast.
Maybe if you want the bear 3D glasses shirt, you can email in if it's
that,
good
or
enough.
You can just go to UrbanOutfitters.com.
Oh, another plug. So we've got Walgreens and Urban Outfitters sponsoring the show today.
Two very indie places.
Very nice, very nice.
That's what the college kids love, Walgreens and Urban Outfitters.
All right, we're here on the Friday before Alabama week. We're going to break down the game for you a little bit. Number 3 Alabama comes to the Swamp this weekend to play number 12 Florida. That's Saturday at 8 p.m. We're going to start off just a little bit just talking about if you're Florida's offense, how do you attack Alabama? And if you're Alabama's defense, how do you attack Florida? For a little bit of background, Alabama has the number 3 rush defense, the number 3 pass defense for a number 2 overall defense nationally. And Florida has the number 10 rush offense, the number 79 pass offense, and the number 22 total offense. So, Tyler, what's your strategy for the Gators?
Florida offensively going against Alabama's defense. What I would do, I'd start off just going with what works for you so far, just running the ball and challenging them. And then if you can have success in that, you're going to have to be able to run the ball. That's the bottom line. I know Alabama's got a great rush defense, but your identity is still running the ball. You've got to try to do that. You've got to try to establish a run, force them to try to bring people in the box, and then throw the ball. If you can get away with that, that would be what I would do.
Right. This is something I wrote a column on today. People seem to be through the week kind of asking do you think John Brantley's going to be more important because they're going to have to throw it more because Alabama's run defense is so good? And I think that the fact that Alabama's run defense is so good, and the fact that they stop the run, and the fact that they win games is not an unrelated thing. I think if you can't run the ball against them, it doesn't really matter how good John Brantley is. He's not going to throw for 450 yards and they win it that way. So the stat I looked up was the last 4 times Alabama lost in the SEC, the teams that they've played against have had pretty much a 2-to-1 run-to-pass ratio. So I think it's key for Florida to kind of establish that. Do you think they're going to be successful doing that? Or how much do you see for them in terms of maybe yards or yards per carry? Or what do you think should be their goal and how do you see that working out?
I don't know exactly the numbers,
right,
I can't
give you
4 yards per carry. It's not gonna be these first 4 games. We all know this is the best team they're gonna play, or probably the best team they play all season, and it's not gonna go so smoothly. And I think they're gonna be more patient. I think Charlie Weiss said it, sometimes punts aren't a bad thing. You may only have 4 or 5 scoring drives in the game, and that wins you the game, But I agree with you in that they can't really change their identity just because they're playing Alabama. I think John Brantley has more importance in this game than he does in the past just because of the fact that they probably are going to throw the ball more. But at the same time, they're going to go as Rainey and Dibbs and their offensive line go. That's their identity. That's the key to Florida's season.
Yeah, that's fair, because it was something that Weiss and then Jonathan Harrison talked about this week, was just trying to – that the identity they've established from the get-go – kind of a hard-nosed running football team, and that they want to push people around. And while the backs don't necessarily seem to fit that mold, just the way Florida's offense works is they're going to run it a lot and they're going to try to be physical with you. Charlie Weiss said this week that they're going to throw the kitchen sink at Alabama. Do you think he's got something special in store, some kind of trick plays maybe we haven't seen yet? What did you think he meant by that?
Maybe he can whip out a trick play from here and there, but I can't imagine that's going to be the difference in the game. Maybe it will be. Maybe it'll be a one-score game. They'll win on a double reverse pass or something like that, but I can't imagine. I think what he's trying to say is the fact that after this game, you won't be sitting there saying, okay, what do they have left? Because I feel the whole time we've been here, we keep saying, how much of the offense are they going to show? How much of the offense are they going to show? The whole time. And after this game, you're going to know, this is what the team is. You know what I mean? And I think we already know what this team is. Obviously, it's a balanced pro-style attack that's going to lean heavily on the run. And I think that's kind of what you're going to see a lot of on Saturday, too. It's not going to be that much different. A trick player, too.
That's fair. I kind of agree with that. I don't think they're going to go away too much from what they are, just because what they've shown so far is what they're good at, and that's what you don't go away from your strengths before the biggest game of the year. We saw a couple Wildcat things last weekend. Do you think there's any chance we see any of that against Alabama, Wildcat stuff?
Yeah, I think they definitely run that. That's one of their packages. It's actually, I think, really good for this team to have, because of the fact that this team isn't about, they don't have a great quarterback. They don't have a great set of receivers. They just don't. Okay, we're at the point where we know that those guys aren't great. They're serviceable. They're okay. But they're not future NFL stars, or they don't appear to be. They're not going to be All-Americans. They're probably not going to be All-SEC. They might be second-team All-SEC, but probably not. Their best players are their running backs. And if you can get them as many running backs involved as you can, even on one play. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you can snap the ball to Rainey and he has a threat to hand it off to Dimps, or the threat to hand it off to Burton, or the threat to keep it himself, that makes it a lot more difficult for the defense to defend. But the problem with that is you have to be able to do that in a way that the defense doesn't realize it before the snap, or doesn't have a whole lot of time to react to that. Because otherwise, if you're Alabama, why not just bring 10 in the box? You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like, Rainey isn't going to have a threat to throw. You could make an argument, maybe Burton? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not really scared of, like, the Rainey-Brantley passing connection, though, going the other way. I don't think Rainey's going to take the snap, and then John Brantley's standing out there, and he throws it to him. I think Alabama, if they see the Wildcat, they can put just everybody in the box near the line of scrimmage, because I don't think that there's really a threat of the throw. And that's why I feel like I don't think we will see it. I think it was kind of something that they brought out against Kentucky because they wanted to run the ball, because Brantley was getting banged up a little bit, and maybe just kind of a decoy thing, give Alabama something that they think they have to practice against. Maybe takes a little bit of their time away from working against the normal offense. That was what stood out to me about that, more than thinking they could use it this weekend.
Well, I think what they can't do is they can't do what they've done. The two times that they've used it, using the Kentucky game, they used it earlier this season. I can't remember the specific game. I don't know if you can. But in those instances, they ran the Wildcat like 9 straight plays, and they can't do that against Alabama. They could probably do it once every, like, maybe once a drive. You could just, out of nowhere, just put Rainey in the backfield and have a direct snap to him and let him do some stuff. But you couldn't do it twice. The defense is going to recognize it. Like, you would have to line it up real quick and snap the ball real quick before Alabama would have time to adjust the line of scrimmage. I think they could get away with that. But like you said, it's not going to be like the Kentucky game where they just keep doing it over and over again and just pounding the team.
Okay, so it's like the element of surprise is more what you're going for then, I guess, in that, like, if they're running the hurry up and they're in one play, and then as soon as the ball's dead, they sprint up to the line and it's a different quarterback and they run it that way. I guess they could be somewhat successful with that, but yeah, I agree with you that I don't think that they can just line up 9 plays in a row and just power Alabama with the Wildcat, because that defense is just too big and too good to have something like that work against them.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going to throw the kitchen sink at them, and that is, I think, just there's a lot of Chris Rainey is in that kitchen sink. There's not a whole lot else in that kitchen sink.
Yeah, Chris Rainey lives in Charlie Weiss's kitchen sink.
He sits Indian style in there.
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to talk about with the offense was with Weiss, just what you think that they're going to do in terms of kind of the run-pass mix. I talked about what I think it needs to be. How far do you think it's going to be in the running game's favor? And do you think the wide receivers get more involved for a change this week? Do you see that as a possibility?
I'm sorry. You're asking me if I think they're going to throw the ball more than they have in the past?
More than they have in the past, and maybe to the wide receivers or to tight ends, or how the passing game is going to work in general.
I mean, I kind of been saying that it's all year. I think once you face a team like an Alabama or like a South Carolina or one of these more athletic teams, one of these more athletic defenses, they're going to have to get the ball at people not named Rainey and Dimps. They can't dump the ball off in the flats as much, because Alabama can still play that same kind of defense where they give them the flats, but that's not going to matter. Like, they'll give them the flats, and that's all Florida will get. There won't be a whole lot of yards after the catch if Alabama's defense is as good as advertised, and I'm 100% sure they are. I think that the receivers will have to get more involved, but I don't think it's going to be predicated on that, but I do think that they're going to challenge Brantley. They're going to say, hey, beat these receivers one-on-one, see what you can do, and I think they'll be a little more involved, but they won't be as involved as they were last year, maybe, or that they just won't. It's not going to be like this game changer, I guess is the way to put it.
All right. This is kind of transitions nicely into a little bit of our like individual matchup talk. When you look at Florida's receivers, you got Thompson, you got Dunbar, two speed guys. And you got Frankie Hammond, who was a lot more involved last week, more of kind of a versatile guy. He can be kind of that slot guy if you need him to, or he can still get up the field. And then for Alabama in the secondary, you got Dre Kirkpatrick, maybe the best cornerback in the nation. You got Jaquan Menzie. You have D. Milliner. And then you have maybe the two best safeties in Robert Lester and Mark Barron. I was looking at some like NFL draft kind of stuff last night to see where Alabama's guys rank, and some sites had them ranked as like the top two safeties, 1 and 2. So do you really think that kind of the Florida's receivers can get open against that secondary, or how much of a struggle is that going to be for them?
That's a mismatch in Alabama's favor, to say the least. Yeah, Florida's receivers aren't great, and Alabama's defensive backs are very, very good. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you're Alabama and you don't crowd the box, Florida's not going to pass the ball that well. Like, you basically, the way Florida's receiving core is going to get catches, the way that John Brantley could have some success is after they've established the run. You know what I mean? Like, if everyone is so focused on the run,
you got Rainey Fever.
They've got to get Rainey Fever, as Charlie Weiss calls it. And if they do that, then, yeah, I think that then John Riley can have some success. But otherwise, I think Alabama's defensive backs are just too good.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Florida's receivers are going to have much of a big day at all against the Alabama DBs. And one thing that kind of interested me along those lines was the idea of when we saw against Kentucky, Florida took a few more shots downfield because they was kind of man-to-man defense, they said. And that kind of gave them the opportunity. Well, the flats were kind of closed off because it was people standing there next to Dempsey and Rainey. So then they had to go downfield a little bit more. Whereas in the first three games, it seemed like teams were playing more zone against them, dropping back, and that gave them all the flats and underneath stuff. So which side of that do you think that we'll see against Alabama?
I think Alabama will go one-on-one more and defend the flats more.
Do you think that's like their optimal strategy, or think that's just what they'll do? Like, well, if you were Alabama, how would you be running it?
If I was Alabama, I'd just go man on everybody and I'd blitz a lot, because I think you've got enough faith in your DBs that they're going to cover Florida's receivers, and you take away the flats. You know that that's like the easiest way for Florida to gain yards. So I think that that's what they would do. Like, why not just defend the flats, make sure that Rainey and Dempsey aren't going to be beating you with those easy plays, make John Bradley's day difficult, challenge John Bradley, get in his face, because he hasn't been challenged this year. We say that he looks more comfortable, but it's because he hasn't had to.
Right,
like, he hasn't been, you know, facing a tough rush. He's more comfortable because he's just basically had to dump the ball off all game.
Yeah, and when you look at Alabama's front seven and how they're going to try to combat the run game, there's Dante Hightower in there. He leads the team in tackles. He's a, you know, high, big NFL draft prospect. He's a big guy, but if he has one weakness, it's that he's a little bit slower than a lot of other middle linebackers. And that's something I think Florida's going to try to exploit. Do you think they're going to try to kind of create situations where they can get, like, one-on-one matchups against Hightower, or do you think that Alabama's going to find a way around that sort of thing, where they can maybe put safeties covering the backs, or maybe, like, outside linebackers on the tight ends, and just get him in a spot where he doesn't have to compete with that kind of speed?
I think, from Alabama's perspective, that yeah, they definitely aren't going to let Hightower be stuck in a situation where he has to cover Dempsey or Rainey in the flats or anything like that. I think the safeties would be a better option. The outside linebackers would be a better option, although I think the safeties are probably the best option in that situation. I can't imagine that Nick Saban's going to say, whoops, I can't believe I accidentally ended up with Dante Hightower in pass protection. How'd that happen?
Right, yeah, because this was something that, this is way kind of off the path, but there was a couple years ago, there was like an NFL game I saw. It was one of the playoff games, like one of those old Colt teams where everybody was just fast and they didn't have any kind of a power game. And what the team that was playing defense did was they put their one and two cornerbacks at the linebacker positions and just had them kind of watch the backs and tight ends. And then kind of, because the receivers weren't as much of a threat, put the other cornerbacks outside. And I think we could see something like that from Alabama if they wanted to with the safeties, where they just kind of bring those guys up in the box because they're not scared of the Chris Rainey, Jeff Demp's power game as much, and they can kind of match the speed more so that way.
I disagree. I think that they could do that in an obvious passing down, but if it's like a second and seven or a first and ten or something like that, Florida could be checking the line of scrimmage and just making a run play. And yeah, no one has to really worry about Jeff Demps and Chris Rainey running anybody over necessarily, but you do have to worry about the offensive lineman
right,
getting to your 5'6", 130-pound outside linebackers. You know what I mean? That'd be a great mismatch for Florida. Florida would love that. I can't imagine how Alabama could get away with that, because that would just make it easier to run the ball, which is the biggest thing Florida can do in this game.
Right, that's a good point. Anything that makes Florida's job easier running it is not something Alabama's probably that interested in, but when we look at the injury report, one of the guys that shows up for Alabama is linebacker C.J. Mosley, and he is their best pass coverage outside linebacker. So I think when you take him out of the picture, that could actually be a key for Florida. A lot of people probably don't know a whole lot about C.J. Mosley, a young guy who's played a little bit last year, but very talented player, and I think if he's out of the mix, that could help Florida a little bit. We got maybe Jordan Reed's returning this week. Gerald Christian looked pretty good last week. How key do you think the tight ends are going to be in their matchups, maybe against some linebackers? Maybe Alabama's not best coverage linebackers this weekend.
I think that Florida's best pass options other than Dempsey and Rainey are still the tight ends. Like, if Jordan Reed can be healthy and get that mismatch with the tight end, he should have a big day. Should. He hasn't had one yet this year in his first two games before he got injured. I gotta imagine that I don't think it's gonna happen again, but it should happen. Like, if you're Florida, you're leaning heavily on your tight ends here, because I don't think the receivers are gonna have a good matchup with the DBs, like you said. Jared Christian looked good on that catch, that 45-yard touchdown catch, but still, like, there hasn't been enough that he hasn't proven himself either. You know what I mean? So this could be a big game. Actually, you're right that the tight ends could finally prove themselves, but this is a game they're gonna need the tight ends to prove themselves.
Yeah, they talk a lot about taking what the defense gives them, and I think that's gonna be something that's kind of key this weekend, because we were talking just a second ago about Hightower. If you have two tight ends, you have two backs, he's on somebody, and you kind of want to target that guy if you can, because All their other guys are just too fast and athletic and quick to get easily burnt by either a tight end or a back out of the backfield.
Yeah, that's the decided schematic advantage Charlie Weiss has always talked about.
That's what he's been looking for. One thing we talked about this week, we were in media, we talked to Jonathan Harrison. He said he thinks this is going to be a line of scrimmage game and that Florida's going to be able to establish the run. When you look at kind of Florida's offensive line versus Alabama's defensive line, the only name that stands out to me on Alabama's defensive line is Josh Chapman. Their nose tackle, he's another like 305-pound kind of anchor guy who just sits there and can hopefully occupy two blockers. Wouldn't want to multiply two blockers. There'd be too many guys on offense.
It'd be four blockers.
He can occupy two blockers and kind of open things up for the linebackers a little bit. We've seen Florida's offensive line play pretty well so far. I mean, how do you think this matchup works out this weekend, Florida's offensive line versus Alabama's defensive line?
There's been no reason to think Florida's offensive line won't do good this season. Like, they've looked great. There hasn't been a whole lot of weaknesses thus far. This is going to be the first test. I think they're going to be pushed back. Like I said earlier, I think this is going to be a situation where they're going to be tested. They're going to, for the first time this year, it's going to be gut check time in a situation. Sometimes they're only going to be looking at 3-4 yards of carry, and it's going to have to be a situation where it's like you just got to keep doing it over and over again and be satisfied with 3-4 yards of carry. I think this is going to be their first real test.
Yeah, I'm with that a lot because I think that we've seen them do well against kind of guys who we don't even know who's on the defensive front for UAB and FAU, and even Kentucky has a lot of guys who are kind of whatever players, not to offend them, but they're just not on the level of the kind of guys Alabama's going to have. So this weekend will be a different kind of test, and I think we'll learn a lot about the Florida offensive line. One more thing I kind of want to get into, maybe have a little fun with this, some over-unders maybe. So like John Brantley, like 160 yards and a touchdown. Would you say better or worse game for him?
I could see more yards. I could also see more interceptions.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I don't like. We'll see. We'll talk about this later when we get to the Gator guarantees. But I don't think that Florida's passing game is going to be all that effective. And I don't think it needs to be per se though. Like if you can get the run going, maybe Brantley 160 is good enough to win the game. But I would probably take under too. Let's say like Dempsey Rainey combined 110 yards.
Over. Combined rushing or total yards?
Rushing.
Either way, over. Yeah, I think they could. I mean, Florida's still going to rely on them heavily. Yeah.
Right, because, I mean, in years past, they haven't been able to get it going. Their numbers have been around 80 or 90 combined, but I really don't think...
Well, Dems was hurt last year.
That's true, but I really...
And Rainey wasn't playing last year, so that kind of hurt.
Yeah, that's not helpful. Hopefully this year they'll be better than the games they weren't playing in, but, yeah, I just don't think Alabama's defensive front is as good as what we've seen from them in the past with guys like Terrence Cody and Marcel Darius.
Kind of a down year for them a little bit.
Yeah, as much of a down year as Alabama can have. And then when you look at the receivers, maybe a guy like Deontay Thompson had some success last year. He had a couple catches. I think it was in like 3 for 50 yards, that kind of thing.
There was no such thing as success for anybody at Florida last year when they played Alabama.
That's a fair point too. But I mean, do you think he gets maybe over under 2.5 catches in this game?
I'm going to say under.
Under? Yeah, that's where...
You get 3 balls thrown at him in one catch. I could see that.
I mean, I could see that, too. I don't think they're going to be able to throw the ball.
He's not good at football.
I mean, that's a fair point. That's a solid argument against him. Switching over to the other side of the ball, we've got the Alabama offense and the Florida defense. Alabama's offense ranks number 19 in total rush offense, number 64 in pass offense. So you can kind of see some similarities to Florida there, where it's much more of a rushing-based attack, and then the quarterback's kind of a game manager. And then they're number 27 in total offense. For the Florida defense, the number 5 in rush defense, they were number 1, kind of fell off a little bit there, and then number 20 pass defense, and the number 5 total defense. So what do you think Florida's game plan against Alabama is going to be this weekend? What's the number 1 thing you're looking for?
Well, I think this is the reason why I think this game could be much closer than last year's. Like, Florida can win this game, versus last year they didn't have a chance, and it's because Florida's really good at stopping the run, and Alabama, their whole identity is running the football. So for Florida... Again, this is going to be predicated on the line of scrimmage. If Florida's defensive linemen can dominate the game or even, you know, make the day difficult for Alabama's offensive line and let Jelani Jenkins and John Bostic, who have played much better this year than they did last year as far as tackling, as far as being physical, I think Florida could have a big day. They could contain Alabama.
Yeah, this game could very easily turn into kind of a defensive slugfest, which is something that I think Florida has to want to do and has to be able to do effectively because... When you look at what makes Alabama's offense so good, it's the ability to run the ball. And I think that Florida has to do everything it can to take away that because when you have guys like Trent Richardson and Eddie Lacy, Just what have they done so far this season? Those two have been just unstoppable.
Richardson
almost.
In four games has 441 yards rushing. Lacey in four games has 371 yards rushing. I'll say this about Richardson. Even though it's 441 yards rushing, it's always impressive. Like, he can have a 4 or 5 yard run, and he breaks like six tackles in that time. He's a little bit like Adrian Peterson in that respect, where like sometimes the final stats aren't as impressive as his actual performance.
Right, you watch what they did and you know it's special, and other backs wouldn't have nearly the same production as they did. I think one thing that is key is you have to stop the run just to get them off the field, because you have two guys who are big, powerful bruisers, and you need to get as many guys in the box as you can to try to shut them down. Because if you let those guys run like 20 times each in the game, you're going to have no shot by the end. You're just going to be so beat and worn down, I feel like. I mean, do you agree that they're going to be able to wear them down if things go their way?
That was how Alabama beat Florida in the 2009 National Championship, was the fact that they had their way with Florida. They just run the ball all day on them, and it got to the point where Florida was just exhausted. Last year, that wasn't really the case because it didn't need to be the case. You know what I mean? Like, Alabama was so far ahead of Florida pretty much from the get-go that Alabama could kind of do whatever it wanted. It didn't really matter. This year, if this is a tight game, Alabama is going to come down to the running game. That's the bottom line on both sides of the ball. If either team can establish the run, that team's going to win the game. So defensively for Florida, you've got to stop the run. Maybe you drop an extra guy in the box if things aren't working out the way you want to. But you've got to have big days from your defensive linemen, Jay Howard, Dominic Easley, Omar Hunter. Those three guys are going to be key. Maybe if you have to drop someone else in the box, maybe you throw Matt Elam down. I don't know.
One thing that we kind of talked about a little bit, Muschamp mentioned this, was how much are you worried about Florida's tackling? Because he said a little bit that the tackling in the secondary has been very, very average. And then when I just look at it, I know Jelani Jenkins has been very, very good this year, but his size compared to some other linebackers, compared to Richardson and Lacey, do you think either of those things could be a problem for Florida?
Yeah, Jelani's a little bit smaller for a linebacker, and that could be an issue. Although I will say that so far this year, like I said earlier, I think that he's actually looked better at getting his nose in there and making hits, making some big hits. Because last year I felt like they just got pushed around. Then again, it started looking that way in October last year. So this is when you really see if there's a difference in those linebackers and the way that they're playing the game, how physical they are. I really like Michael Taylor. Maybe they can get him in there too, because that kid always seems to put his nose in the middle of something.
Yeah, he looked real good last week, and I was pretty impressed because they got him in there kind of early with the game being out of hand, and he showed really well. So it's another guy. Maybe if they start getting worn down, at least you know you have a guy on the bench you can bring in and get Jelani or Bosic a little bit of a breather.
Right. Well, I don't want to make this too much about the backup linebacker, but like, he has always looked good when he's on the field. I think the one thing is that the defense is pretty complex. They're making a lot of changes to the line of scrimmage. They're doing a lot of different things defensively. They're running 4-3. They're running 3-4. They're running nickel. And I think that's probably what's holding him back. So. Right.
And now Muschamp, like we said a little bit, Muschamp talked about the secondary and them having to wrap up and tackle better. This was not something that I'd noticed before he said it, because I feel like there's very few opportunities where they've had to tackle a guy just because there's not a lot of passes getting completed, not a lot of runs getting to the second level. But is this something you've noticed too, where the secondary hasn't tackled as well as they might want to?
I mean, I didn't even notice it really either, just because the fact that no one's really been able to have any success throwing the ball against them. They haven't been put in that many tough situations. He said that it's been very average, which I would just say means they've been average.
Right. It's like having my shirt's an extra medium.
Yeah,
like,
basically. I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a deal. They are cornerbacks for a reason, and it's because they're good at defending the pass. The fact that they can stop the run, obviously they can get better, but I don't see that as being a problem in the Alabama game. If Alabama's run the ball, it's not going to be because of Florida's defensive back. It's going to be because of Florida's defensive line and Florida's linebackers.
Right. Florida, one of the keys, obviously, to stopping the run is going to be the play of the defensive line. And you know the guys that they got in there. You got the Ronald Powell. You got Jay Howard, Dominic Easley, Sharif Floyd. Which of those guys do you think is going to be, maybe if there's one who's the most important or somebody you expect to kind of step up or stand out on the front there, who would it be?
I guess I'd like to see Sharif Floyd take a step forward if I'm Florida. You know what I mean? Because he's, like, not been great in his games back so far. He's been okay, but he's a guy that could potentially dominate a game, as talented as he is, as good as he looked last year. Of those big three, you know, Powell, Easley, and Floyd, as freshman last year, he looked the best. And this year, we haven't really, I mean, have you noticed him that much?
Not a ton. I mean, obviously he wasn't in there the first two games, but since then, I think he's been kind of just out there, just another guy, less than a standout like he was at times last year. So, I mean, if they can get him going, that would be nice for sure. When I look at kind of that defensive line, Dominic Easley, not as heavy as a lot of the other defensive linemen might be. He was like in the 280 range, and the other guys are around 290, 300. Against a big physical line like Alabama, is that going to be a problem for him, per se, maybe compared to how he was able to do against the smaller lines that they've seen to this point?
I don't think so. I don't think that the weight's going to be the issue. The thing with him is he's so fast off the ball that he is going to be a tough mismatch for any guard and any center. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, sure, they're bigger than him. He's got to let his speed dictate the game. If he can get that quick first step against them, they're going to have a tough time. Like, they can still, if they get their body on him, yeah, they can block him. They're so much bigger than him. Right. But if he's in the backfield and they're blocking him, that's going to disrupt the whole flow of the offense. Even if they get a body on him, even if he can make a tackle, if he's got them on their heels trying to make sure he doesn't get too far in the backfield, I think that's that messes up the whole play. So he can still have success. Don't expect him to get a lot of tackles, but expect him to do his thing. Expect him to disrupt the offense.
Right. I think if he plays his A game and he can get in there and he can make the back change direction right away, or he can make make McCarron have to move around a little bit and just generally be a nuisance and be a problem for Alabama's offensive line, that's something that would be very good for Florida.
He does seem like a walking, talking nuisance when he's on the field.
Yeah. For more on that, you got to check out Tyler Story today if you can get your hands on a copy of The Alligator. Big rap feature on Dominique Easley. For those of you, like our listeners out in San Diego and Australia, make sure you go on alligatorsports.org. Quick plug in the middle of the show for a change. But, yeah, check out Tyler's stuff. Moving on a little bit, Alabama's offensive line. We got DJ Fluker at right tackle. He's a big, athletic guy.
His name is DJ Fluker. That should just tell you how big he is.
That's pretty awesome. And he's projected as one of the top picks in the NFL draft in terms of how accurate that can be at this point in the year. But just from an athleticism standpoint, it shows that he's got the tools. Their left tackle has actually been their best offensive lineman this year. That's Barrett Jones. They have a very experienced center, some quality guards. They're returning four starters from last year's team. How do you see that kind of matchup going? We talked about it a little bit already, obviously, but do you think Alabama's line is so good that they're going to be able to neutralize the strength of Florida's team, or maybe Florida still has the same kind of success they've been having, just not as much? How do you see that matchup playing out?
I think it's kind of a little bit of both. I think Florida hasn't played an offensive line this good, and Alabama has a basic defensive line this good. So we're going to see how that one plays out. I don't really know for sure until the actual game happens. I don't want to sit here and pretend like I know. But I think it's going to be one of those games where both teams might be a little bit frustrated by the fact that they can't just impose their will on either side.
Yeah, it's going to be obviously the biggest test each team has seen. And Alabama's played like Penn State is probably the part, and they played Arkansas last week. Those are a couple solid teams.
Penn State almost lost to Temple.
Certainly better than Florida. Okay, well,
and Temple's coached by Steve Adazia.
Yeah. I mean, this is a fair point, but Arkansas is pretty good, at least better than any teams Florida's played so far.
No,
so.
I think Alabama's faced harder teams than Florida. I mean, faced harder teams than Florida has, but I don't think they've. I think Florida's the best team that they will have faced up to this point.
That's definitely fair. That's definitely a fair point. Moving into kind of some of the other matchups we got. We actually have an email this week from Marshall Spivak. He's the guy out in San Diego, and we actually have a great video from him with his dogs running on the beach. We talked a little bit about that on Monday's show if you tuned in.
It's too bad we can't get that on the podcast.
He also sent us, and he also wants to know about the T-shirt thing, but we'll talk about that in the intros a little bit. Let's see. He wants to know if there's any chance that Florida kind of double teams Marquise Mays if they get to shut down the run, because Mays had some success against Florida 2 years ago. Had a catch and then the touchdown on that trick play last year. How much of a threat is he compared to the other Alabama receivers, and would Florida put extra attention on him to try to neutralize that, do you think?
I mean, Marquise Mays is their best receiver, and then obviously Darius Hanks is pretty good too. But I don't know. I think if you're Florida, you start off single-teaming him. You just play him normal straight up. And then if he has success early, maybe you go into a double team. But I don't see Will Muschamp double-teaming. Like, he seems the type of guy that, like, He's got some swagger to him. I think he wants his DBs to challenge the receivers. You know what I mean? I think he'd want Marcus Robertson or Cody Riggs to just get in their face, keep jamming them, keep trying to, you know, give them a tough day and go one-on-one. I think that's what Florida will do. Do I think they should double-team Marquise Mays? I would say go the first couple drives, play normal defense, see how it goes. If Marquise Mays is having his will, then, yeah, go for the double-team.
I kind of agree with that, but at the same time, I feel like you're not going to have guys to spare. Like, the caveat in the email
That's true. That's a good idea. Florida should run, like, 14 guys on defense, and they can double-team me and take care of
the run. If they could do that, they might have a chance. But I think, yeah, that was kind of the caveat, was if they can stop the run, then do they kind of look to double-team Mays. But I think it's going to take all the guys you can spare to try to stop the run in general, just because, like we just talked about with Alabama's line and Alabama's backs, those are some serious players. And then another thing we didn't mention was Alabama's tight ends. They have Brad Smellie, who's – what's he? You got
Smellie's
the stats there.
Eight catches for 87 yards, a long of 20, no touchdowns.
So he's third on the team in receiving. It's kind of a situation where Alabama is kind of a lot like Florida, and we can talk about A.J. McCarron in a little bit, but it's kind of a short passing attack. Maybe they stretch the field if they need to every once in a while. Kind of what Florida wants to do, where they dink and dunk. And they also have a guy in Michael Williams who's just a big blocking tight end. So they have a lot of guys that are going to try to establish the run and just generate push up front. They play a lot of two tight end sets, so Florida is definitely going to have to try to stack everybody in the box.
Yeah. I think it's pretty simple, the strategy for Florida's defense and the strategy for Alabama's offense. The strategy for the whole game is pretty simple, and it's establish the run. If you run, you win.
Do you think you see a lot of man-to-man from Florida, too, in the same way Alabama's going to try to just one-on-ones with everybody?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, Florida's DBs have looked good to this point in defending the pass, so just keep doing it. I mean, they haven't, like, they didn't face anyone great. They did face Derek Rogers, who I think is pretty good. And LaRod King from Kentucky, who's pretty good as well. I don't think Marquise Maye is necessarily that much better than those guys. You know what I mean? So I think that if you're Florida, why not just keep single teaming, go one on one, and see how they do. By the way, I don't think anyone else has used the word single team before, but I like the idea of that.
Right.
We're gonna single team.
Yeah, we're gonna single team him. If you can double team him, you should be able to single team him. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's gonna be a lot of man stuff because I don't think Alabama has. We just gave you kind of the rundown. I don't think they have a receiver or a tight end or somebody who. You just can't cover that guy one-on-one, or it's like a matchup problem because of the guy's size or something like that. Like, Alabama has some good players, some good receiving options, but I don't think that they have any definitive mismatches that require so much more extra attention. And a lot of that has to do with A.J. McCarron. Tyler, you have his stats there. Just read those off for me real quick.
A.J. McCarron passing the ball this year, or do you want A.J. McCarron running the ball? Because I can give you both.
I feel like he's a lot more of a passing threat, so we'll probably just stick with that.
Well, I'm starting with his rushing attempts just for fun. He has 12 attempts for negative 11 yards this year with a long of 4. So you're going to keep that contained. passing the ball, he is 63 for 95 for 779 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks. Very average 144 efficiency rating, which this is in the NFL. That's not great. That's like okay. Robert Griffin for Baylor has like a 307 average or something
like that. Well, he also has more touchdowns than incompletions.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to give you like a parameter.
Yeah.
I think Robert Griffin has like a 200 average or something along those lines. So the best quarterback in the nation generally has something around like 190 to 200.
All right.
McCarron's at 144. He's averaging 194.8 yards per game. He's a very solid quarterback. I'll say that.
Yeah, everything I've heard about him is just that he's kind of calm. He's got the solid demeanor. He's a good leader and a good game manager, and
it's the model that McElroy they had last year with their quarterback, where it's like you're not going to win games with their quarterback, but you're not going to lose games either with that quarterback.
Right.
He's just going to be like steady Eddie,
and that's all Alabama needs to do. And I think in a lot of ways, Florida's kind of trying to be the same thing. Like, I think a lot of people have kind of just assumed because John Brantley is not that great that Alabama's got the better of the quarterback matchup. But I feel like it could go either way. Like, they're both kind of a game manager, just take what the defense gives them and hand it off a bunch of times type.
Yeah, I agree. They're very similar styles. Do you know what Brantley's numbers are exactly at this point? Can we compare those?
I have John Brantley at 55 of 86, 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and 752 yards.
So almost exactly the same. McCarron has, like, 40 yards more passing on, like, 11 more attempts. What's his completion percentage?
64.
And McCarron's at 66%.
They're right there. What's the efficiency number you gave me again?
The what?
The efficiency number you gave
me.
Oh, yeah.
McCarron's 144.9.
So Brantley's 148.1. So,
unbelievable.
They're right there. So it's kind of a thing where it's going to be a little bit looking in the mirror. There's a lot of, like, Florida wishes they could run the ball like Alabama does, but
this is like watching a stoppable force versus a movable object.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Both offenses are good, especially the Bama run game, but in terms of the passing game, there's not going to be a lot of blow-you-away plays. Julio Jones is long gone. It's going to be a very different Alabama team than maybe they've seen the last couple of years when Jones was out there just doing everything. One thing I want to touch on before we wrap this up is the kind of the coaching matchup. We talked about, you know, you got Nick Saban was the kind of the mentor of Will Muschamp, and then Kirby Smart's like also from that family, obviously being the Alabama defensive coordinator now. And then you have Dan Quinn, who worked with Muschamp and Saban at Miami, and then kind of Charlie Weiss, who worked with Bill Belichick, who worked with Nick Saban. They're all kind of interconnected somehow. Do you think that all of that stuff has any kind of factor, be it the familiarity or maybe one team knows more so what to expect from the other? Do you see that working as in anybody's favor this weekend, that kind of familiarity?
I think they're both going to know each other's defenses pretty well. They're going to go into this knowing each other's defenses as well as they know any defense they face this year. Marquise Mays had a quote earlier this week where he said basically that Muschamp and Saban have this run the same stuff. Essentially, like they came into the Texas game 2 years ago in the national championship. Alabama did. Prepared for everything. You know what I mean? So I could see a similar situation going on both sides. Florida's offense is going to know the ins and outs of Alabama's defense and vice versa. So I think it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be interesting to watch. And I do think it has a pleasant effect. Like Dan Quinn said earlier this week, you know, it's not that uncommon. That's as often as coaches change teams, you're going to end up running against guys that you know. But this is just a heightened example. I think what's interesting is we kind of ran this down. How much I think, like Muschamp, kind of models what his coaching philosophy is after what Saban was doing at LSU when he worked with him, with his pro style, simple offense, and a defense that's going to try to dominate the games. He's going to try to win the game with defense and let the offense just not get in the way.
Yeah. One thing that kind of stood out to me along those lines was when we talked to Muschamp about the influence Saban had on him. He said the total program management is the kind of thing he got from him, number one overall, and then. After that, one thing was kind of the critical factors approach that we always hear Muschamp talking about with freshmen and players and in terms of recruiting is that every position he has identified certain things that he looks for in those type of players. And if you meet those stats, it's less about like who's a 4-star and who's a 5-star, but who meets the kind of criteria Muschamp's looking for. So,
like for example, like tall cornerbacks, like Marcus Roberson, who's like 6'1". Like that's what they like. Both of them really like tall cornerbacks.
Right. We talked to them about this week. Obviously, we asked them how much it's similar between the two teams in terms of what they run on offense and what they run on defense. And one thing they were all quick to point out was that. Kind of what a good coordinator does is they tailor their defense or offense to the personnel that they have. So it's not the same exact plays or the same exact play calls or anything like that. But it was something, and this was something that Jonathan Harrison kind of said. He feels like going against the Florida defensive line, it's a lot of the same type of players that he'll see on the Alabama defensive line. Maybe because of it's the same approach generally in terms of what the defense does, and maybe because they're looking for players with the same critical factors that have. You know, what they're looking for at those positions. So, I mean, it's something that's going to be interesting to watch for sure, that coaching matchup. And that about does it for the Alabama preview. So I guess it's time to wrap up the show with our Gator guarantees for this week. Only two men, so this is going to be a lot quicker, and maybe we'll be able to shoot a better percentage. Have not done great so far this season, but we don't have anything to go over from last week because there was obviously we didn't get to do one with the road trip to Kentucky. But Tyler, what do you have for us this week?
Gator guarantee, Will Muschamp will be... He'll lose his voice by the end of this game.
Okay.
So there'll be a lot of yelling at the refs, and the crowd's, of course, going to be loud. It's going to be yelling over his own crowd.
Short press conference, all raspy and stuff? Is that what you're looking for?
I'm saying that when we talk to him, he won't have much of a voice left after the game.
That's fair. And, you know, looking back on it, it's a miracle he's had a voice after all these games so far.
Like he just went nuts in, like, the Tennessee game. Every game, like the UAB game, the FAU game, he's, like, lost his mind at a certain point in the game. Now imagine a game where he's actually going to be – in a close battle with a team that's just as talented, probably more talented.
Nameless, faceless, man.
No, they're more talented. They may not have names or faces, but they have more talented nameless and faceless personas.
All week, Florida in media, everybody's been calling Alabama nameless, faceless. That's how they approach every game. And maybe Muschamp just has a baseline intensity that he attacks every game with. But
it's going to be more intense, and it's going to be... more difficult. He's going to be more intense, and he's going to be intense for a longer period of time, because you can't ever relax. Like, this game's going to be tight, I think. I think this game's going to be close. I really do. I think Florida's going to stick with it. I think Alabama will probably win the game. At the end, it'll be a tight game, though. I think Alabama's just a better team, but I think Muschamp will be loud the whole time. Plus, you know he wants to beat Saban so bad. The last thing he wants at the end of the game to go up the sideline, to go up the 50-yard line, shake Saban's hand, and have Saban say, "Who's your daddy, Will?"
Wow, yeah, I think if he can avoid that, that would be great. I don't think that's really his dream scenario. You reminded me of something. We did not do score predictions yet, so why don't you hop on that right now? What do you think? How do you think it's going to work out?
I'm going to say 17-14, Alabama.
Okay, you got a low scoring game. You just don't think either offense is going to be able to get it going.
I think it's going to come down to the defenses, like I've said, and I think that Alabama's just going to be the better team at the end of the day. That's why I have Alabama on top. But I mean, I think Florida's going to keep this one tight.
All right, when we were talking about this in the office last night, and I ended up going with 31-13 Alabama. And I've been down on Florida all year, and this is just another one of those where they're probably going to prove me wrong, but I just don't see them being able to consistently stop Richardson and Lacey, and even if they do that, just to get something going on offense, I just don't see it. Which kind of ties into my Gator guarantee, which is that a Florida receiver will not catch a pass this weekend.
Zero passes for Florida.
Zero passes for Thompson, Dunbar, Hammond, Robert Clark. He's not going to catch one either.
Bobby Clark.
All these guys are not going to catch a pass just because I think Kirkpatrick and Milliner, those, and then the safeties, they're just too good, and I don't think they're going to let something like that happen. And if they do, it's going to be like a 2-yard pass.
Yeah, plus the receivers just aren't good. It's been close. There was a Tennessee game, and the Florida receivers combined for 3 catches for 27 yards.
Yeah, that sounds about right if it was even 27. I know Dunbar had, like, 1 catch for 2 yards, and that was his contribution to the game. So, I mean, they have not been able to get it going. They have not been able to get it deep. And when you look at Alabama's matchup, whoever Kirkpatrick is on is just done. Like, he's 6'3". He's as fast as any of those guys. He's not going to get shook. He's just too good for them to beat him, I think. So, all right, well, that about wraps up the show for this week.
It's a nice grim note for you guys to end on.
Yeah, we firmly believe in ending on a bad note, even when it's just the Gator guarantees. So, like I said, that about wraps it up. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. The email's been blowing up this week with Tyler's free T-shirt giveaway offer. If you have any kind of comments, be sure to send those there. We couldn't get Cody in today. Cody was supposed to come in. Cody kind of got under the weather at the last second, so we ended up running a 2-man show. But if you have any guests that you would like us to bring back, if you don't like Tom or Watts and want me and Tyler to do it every week, that's cool too. Or if you like it the other way around. If I should be fired as host, you can just shout that out. Anything you want, we do this for y'all, so let us know what you're thinking on that front. You can also tweet us at Alligator Sports. You can follow me at Greg Luca. You can follow Tyler.
Tyler_Jet, 2 underscores.
2 underscores. See, like, it's confusing because when we print the thing in print, you can't tell if it's 1 underscore or 2. But on the podcast, you get it straight. Yeah, that's why 2 underscores.
You got to read the articles and listen to the podcast.
We have a multimedia endeavor here at the Alligator. So, also, subscribe on iTunes to get this updated to your feed all the time. We'll have this one hopefully out by Friday afternoon, so y'all can get it in before Saturday night's game.
I do like the fact that you're on the podcast saying what time you think this podcast is going to be available, as if the listeners of this podcast won't know at what point this is going to be available.
That's fair.
Like, are they going to be listening like, oh, is this available yet, the podcast that I'm listening to?
Well, no, because if you download it Friday at 2, you're going to be like, oh, I was one of the first ones, I bet.
Yeah.
And that's going to be real exciting for the listeners.
That's true.
You can also go on Facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. You can comment there. You can like our page, and then you'll get the updates that way too. We're going to completely inundate you with podcast talk. So, yeah, find us at all these places. Enjoy the game this weekend, and we will be back on Monday with our recap show. So until then, thank you for listening.